This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined, as always, by Riley Chambers. Tonight, we've got two sponsors for the show. Those are Jamf Software and Squarespace. We'll tell you more about both of those. Riley, how are you?
Good. Starting winter break here. We called that President's Day weekend in my day, but it's called winter break now, apparently. So,
is that to avoid offending people who don't believe in the presidential system?
I guess. Because I wonder if Trump is elected, if we'll get more time off or less.
Yeah, so we have to spend it on a golf course in Aberdeen.
Okay, so here, I don't know how follow. I honestly don't know how closely people follow like the U.S. presidential election outside of the U.S. Like, are you aware of what's going on?
Yeah, I am, mainly because I'm sort of forced to be aware of it, because every morning I wake up and there seems to be another debate the night before on Twitter.
It's a lot of debates, and it is like a two-year-long process. It is awful. It takes, and it's so much worse now than I think. I remember the first like election with Twitter was like 08, and it was a weird one, and it's just gotten worse. It's just so long and drawn out. So here is the thing I need you to see if you can come up with on the fly. How many elections from, let's see, we'll say in the last 30 years have not had a Bush or a Clinton, at least on the primary?
At least in the primary?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. That's going to be tricky. It must have been before Reagan, right?
Yeah.
Is it Nixon?
Yeah, because, see, Bush Sr. ran in the primaries with Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, he ended up being his VP. So, because you think about it, like, this year you've got Jeb Bush and Hillary. In 2012, you had Hillary in the primaries. And I'm sure Jeb probably was in the primaries, too. Okay? So, 8, Clinton. Hillary is in the primaries. 2004, Bush. 2000, Bush. 1996, Clinton. 1992, Bush and Clinton. 1988, Bush. 1984, Bush. And I don't know if Bush Sr. ran in the primaries. I'm reading his book, and I want to say he actually may have ran in the primaries in 1980. That's actually kind of crazy to think about, that these two families have been...
It's great how you don't have a royal family in America.
Bingo. I mean, it's over here. Let me look at the title, but it's the book I'm reading is called Destiny and Power, and it's about George H.W. Bush, which is Bush Sr. And it is kind of crazy to think about when you look at those two families, how influential they have been in American politics in the last 30 years. In every single election, the earliest would have been 80, if not, you know, that would have been the earliest that one would have been involved. If not, that would have been 76, that a Bush or Clinton was not at least involved in the primaries.
That's crazy.
It is crazy to think about. This is your out of school history lesson. It is the U.S. political season is it's very interesting, and you know, we obviously have to go to great lengths at school to not really like, we don't talk about it, and it's just not something we don't. We talk about past presidents, not about current presidential hopefuls. And
yeah.
So I think I've mentioned this on the show. I'm always like very interested in how presidents are perceived like 30 years post their term, mm-hmm. because that changed. I think it changes dramatically. I think people will look at like Bush and Obama so much differently 30 years from now. And when I mean Bush, I mean W. Bush. Like, I think you'll just look at those two terms, because I would say both those presidents served in some of the most difficult time periods in the American history.
No doubt. Yeah.
So yeah, that's one for the history books, though.
Well, they've both invented their own very interesting ways of dealing with problems outside their own borders.
True.
Flying death robots from the sky is quite something to come up with.
And websites as well.
Yeah, making up funny names for Islamic State on Twitter seems to be about the extent of our fight back at the moment.
Yeah, Twitter's a funny one. That kind of has changed. It just amplifies things, good and bad, all at the same time. Like, Twitter is the best and worst of everything. Of everything with mankind. Like, all in
Twitter is us, right? That's the problem.
Right. Yeah, Twitter like just is a mirror into ourselves. So anyways, that's like beyond the point. So
There's our philosophy lesson for today. Yep.
So back to our Deployment 16 series. This, if you're new to the show, this is a something we've done once before in 2014, where we just kind of take the first really quarter of the year and try to walk schools through the process of thinking about deployments from theory down to like deployment day and everything in between. And these have been helpful for me. I know me personally, as we think through devices and we discuss that internally and we talk about financing and a number of years we finance for. And so these are helpful for us. I think these shows are kind of medicine for us and allow us to kind of work out our current thoughts at the moment. Because in reality, a lot of my assumptions and thoughts have changed since 2014. Not because anything dramatic has changed, but because a lot of little things have changed. And that's one of the things that I think this show is dramatically different than maybe a couple years ago, and what my recommendations are. And so what we're talking about this week is financing and rollout. So we'll start with financing. And I think the first question that schools must ask when they're making large technology deployments is, do you lease or do you buy? And I think that is the fundamental question you've got to answer before you get through like the secondary questions about either one of those is, do you lease or do you buy?
Well, I think there is maybe a philosophical question that you might want to answer first, though, which is the school going to do this or are we going to ask parents to do it? And I think we've sort of written this with the assumption that the school's going to do it. But in large part, I'm seeing a lot of schools come to this problem and they're saying, well, let's get the parents to buy the device and then we'll sort of manage it or something like that. And I think that, well, I was going to say often leads to problems. It almost always leads to some kind of problem and can often lead to essentially the failure of the deployment or at least a very low level of achievement with the deployment. So that's something that I think we should at least mention, even if we're not going to discuss it in particularly much detail, but I think it's something that schools are definitely trying, and it's not working out that well from what I can see.
Well, why don't we take a moment to kind of discuss that? And so a lot of schools, they'll do like a bring your own tech deployment, and the reasons, now in a nutshell, the reasons I am fundamentally against those is, number one, when you do bring your own device, This forces teachers to teach to the lowest common device. So you might have one kid with an iPad Pro and you might have one kid with a Kindle Fire. And those are dramatically different devices with dramatically different specs and apps and and features.
Yeah.
And of course, some schools they've said, well, you must bring at least an iPad X with these specs. And that is certainly better than the complete free-for-all of bring your own tech, wouldn't you agree?
It certainly gives a level of standardization. The way I kind of describe this, Bradley, is if you imagine, you know, the sort of management 2x2 matrices that everybody loves to do. If you imagine one axis being the level of desired control over the deployment, you know, from high control to low control, and then maybe left to right, you can imagine institutional on the right-hand side of the horizontal axis and personal ownership on the left, then you end up with four quarters. And you've got high control institutional deployment. That's the top right corner. That's an easy world to live in. That's the world I live in. And there's a reason I chose that corner, because it's the easiest one of the all four. But then you've got high control personal ownership. That's the top left corner. And that is an incredibly difficult place to be. That is basically the coffin corner. That's the death box. But then if you are prepared to reduce your requirements for control, so if you go to the lower half of the quadrants and say, well, okay, we'll take low control, then low control personal deployment is quite easy. Just bring something and use it. That's fine. Low control organizational deployment, that's a wee bit trickier, because sometimes you're saying, well, no, okay, we're going to give away devices, but we don't care what you do with them. And then if something bad happens with them, that's on you. So you got to think about it in terms of how much control do you want and what are you going to do to get that control? Can you be an organizational deployment? Ideally, that's what you're going to do, because if you want that high control, and being a school deployment really, really helps. And I remember having this discussion one time. We were at an Apple event and there was a woman from another school there. And I was saying, look, we've leased the devices and we've applied supervision to our devices. And this woman was saying, well, that's ridiculous. That's denying students the right to learn and manage for themselves and stuff. And I said, well, yeah, that's fine, except that what happens when something goes wrong and your management insists that you apply some control that's only available for supervision? At that point, your requirement for control has gone from low to high, but you're still in a situation where you've deployed in such a way that you can't get that control back. So that was something that it's another kind of fundamental consideration, is do you supervise or not? It's a question for perhaps another show. But if you think of, I always think about that 4x4, organizational control, high control versus low control, and organizational deployment versus personal deployment, and which one of those four corners do you want to be? And the one I never want to be in is high control personal deployment. But it's amazing to me, Bradley, how many schools are ending up in exactly that corner. There's an article in a newspaper from Australia just that you and I both shared with each other the other week, where this school was having people buy and bring in iPads, and then they were taking them, wiping them, supervising them, enrolling them in MDM, and applying all kinds of incredibly strict controls to a device that this school didn't even own. And I was like, how does any school get away with that? I'm amazed that anybody gets away with it. And increasingly, I think people are starting to push back against that quite strongly.
Well, and one of the fundamental reasons I'm against a non-school-owned is just sort of the way DEP is set up now. And that's the only way to get devices into DEP is for the school to purchase them. Now, the other question, you know, before you even discover like on lease or buy is how do you fund it? And I know a lot of schools fund technology through technology fees. I've got no opinion, yes or no on that. Our school does not have technology fees, but we don't have any sort of fees at all. Like student field trips are included in the tuition. I mean, the only thing that's not included in our tuition is lunch.
I'm actually quite strongly against technology fees, Bradley, and I'll tell you why. It's because why is technology the one thing that you itemize separately from everything else? You know, you don't break out for parents a water fee, you know, a heating fee. You don't break down how much you paid the teachers and what proportion of that goes to their student. You don't break down a furniture fee. And I think if by putting technology out as a separate thing, then what you're saying is this is like a bolt on to the school. It's an extra. It's not really part of the core experience. It's something that we're adding on top. And then once you kind of, to put a school management view on it, once you reveal that number, then you get into debates about whether that number is too low or too high. Well, you rarely get into debates about whether it's too low. More often than not, you get debates about why it's too high. And I see a lot of, particularly private schools, who do break out a technology fee. They are sort of, not constantly, but often in dispute with parents about the fact that, well, your technology fee is £450. I can get that same technology or equivalent technology, they think, for half the price. So I'm going to get that for half the price. Whereas if you just say, well, here's the tuition fee, part of our school philosophy is one-to-one computer use, here's your computer for one-to-one use, then it's kind of up to me what I do with that. And if the parents want to pay the fee, that's fine. If they don't want to pay the fee, also fine. But then they don't come to the school, obviously. So that's it.
Yeah, and a lot of schools, they'll have more than just technology fees. I've seen some schools, they'll have like PE fees. And of course, you know, then there's, you know, again, people, you know, some schools, you add these fees in the tuition or break these fees out of the tuition in some ways to make the tuition seem lower on the website. So if you're, you know, if you're really trying to clear X number per student in terms of revenue, but you say, okay, we'll you know, it's just, it's in some ways, it's would you say a marketing play by doing that, by having those fees on?
It's sort of 99 cents right. Marketing, isn't it? You know, it's here's the base price, and then here's these 10 other things that you have to get if you want to be a socially accepted member of the school, right? And that's another reason why I would argue against bring your own device as well, Bradley, is that at least in the UK, and I've talked about this before in the show, but in the UK we have school uniforms. And one of the reasons why we have that is because that prevents people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds from being visibly distinct from people from higher socioeconomic backgrounds through the amount of money parents can spend on clothes and shoes and fashion accessories and so on. Yet here we are in a situation where we're basically bringing back a visible differentiator for high and low income students through technology. So you have got that kid who's going to bring in the iPad Pro with a pencil. And then you've got that kid who's going to bring in the 7-inch Android tablet from Tesco for £100. And then that's a very visible difference. And not only in some ways, in fact, not in some ways, in all ways, that's actually a much more serious difference than what shoes they've got on. Because whatever shoes you've got on doesn't seriously impact your education one way or the other. But if you're walking in with an iPad Pro and you're walking in with an Android tablet that hasn't had a software update in 3 years, then that is going to materially impact the experience you can have, the educational experience you can have in school. And for that reason alone, I'm fundamentally against generic multi-platform bring your own device. Like you said, though, Bradley, many schools are saying bring your own iPad. And I think in truth, even if you do allow multi-platform BYOD, what you end up with is 80% iPad anyway. But then you've got this 20% who you've got to spend the other 80% of the support effort just trying to get them up and running as well.
So before we move on, let's thank our first sponsor of the night. It is the fine folks at Squarespace. So this episode of Out of School is brought to you by Squarespace. Start building your website today at squarespace.com. Use the offer code PUPIL at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. You guys know Squarespace. It's the great place to build a website for really any project you have. Everything is incredibly easy to use. There's no coding required. I actually had someone text me last night and said, hey, I'm looking to start a little small business doing some valet parking. Where do I build a website at? It's very, very simple. Use Squarespace. Again, intuitive and easy-to-use tools. State-of-the-art technology, so you have great security, great stability. I have about 10 Squarespace websites. I have notifications set up for all of them on downtime, virtually no downtime. I don't remember the last time I got a notification. It's trusted by millions of people, and some of the most respected brands in the world use Squarespace. So again, start a free trial today. No credit card required to get started. That's one of the things I love about their trial. You can get started without putting in a credit card. You can get started without putting in a credit card. Starts at just $8 a month, and you get a free domain name if you sign up for a year. So, again, go to squarespace.com, use the offer code PUPIL when you do your first purchase to get 10% off. Again, thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring the show this week.
Okay, so if we're going to make the assumption then that we're going to do some kind of institutional operation to deploy these computers, because I think really and truly that's kind of the spirit of what we're talking about in this series, is how do we as organizations competently and professionally procure, design, deploy, and manage one-to-one computer rollouts? How do we do that? Financing is obviously one of the things we're going to have to think about.
Yeah, and this is something that years ago, my assumption was 3-year leases, and that was just what you did. And but I've kind of come around on different types of purchasing, and I don't know if it's just me getting older or understanding more situations, or if it's just the hardware has changed from it was 3 to 6 years ago. But if you are going to lease, I think you're looking at one of two options on years, generally 3 to 4. Unless there's some sort of grant funding, like year one and year two, you might as well just pay for it. And then if you go 5, if you had financed, you just think about in terms of like computing years, that is a long time to have a device.
Yeah, that would be like going from the iPad 1 to the iPad Air 2 last year. That would be your refresh cycle. And you know, the original iPad was out of date within 2.5 years of its release. Now, I think, to give you credit, Bradley, I think the reason that you're changing your mind on that is really primarily because the hardware has changed. And hardware longevity has changed. And I think, quite frankly, that's part of, if not all of, but part of, what we're seeing feeding through in this declining iPad sales is that quite very quickly, in fact, the iPad got mature. You know, the iPad was mature within one generation of launch, the iPad 2. And people have just been holding on to these devices. And I'm only just now starting to see iPad 2 users upgrade to something newer. And that's a good lifespan. But what we're finding, I think, is that the iPad is basically a PC of some kind. It's in that class of device. It's not in the smartphone class of device. And that category error that we all made at the start, where we thought the iPad was going to be like the iPhone, it is coming back to haunt Apple a little bit, I think. And I'm not saying that's the only reason why sales are slowing down with iPad, but I think it is one, is that these things are just lasting and lasting and lasting in a way that nobody thought they would.
Yeah, and I really credit a lot of this to the move to flash storage, and I've even seen that on the like MacBook Air line, most of you guys know, I, you know, work at Brainerd Baptist School, and then there's a Brainerd Baptist Church that I work at as well. I'm pulling out, as of like next week, I will have all of the MacBook Pro laptops that had the spinning disc, like out of cycle. I'll still have a couple of iMacs in production that, you know, still have the spinning platter, but again, those are a lot different because they're stable in terms of they don't move. But we just have seen so much more durability out of these Airs, and you know, I can pretty much guarantee I'm going to be replacing every hard drive in a MacBook Pro after about 2 years. And it's to no one's fault. Like they're just moving with them. They're like, they're taking them from meeting to meeting, but they're just not durable. And so with the iPad line starting with that, it just from a durability perspective, it was so much better off. Matt, of course, you would never put spinning platter drives in an iPad. That'd be crazy, but still.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a device that basically has no moving parts apart from the lock switch and the volume buttons. You know, there are no other moving parts whatsoever. And the only thing that is really at risk from manual handling is the glass on the front. So I think, you know, when that original iPad came out, you were looking at a device that barely made it into existence. It was only just powerful enough, capacious enough, had enough RAM to just get started. You know, you're talking about a device that was built in the iPhone 3GS era, and it was all of that kind of class of hardware. And nowadays, you're looking at something that is almost power comparable with a Mac laptop, if you're talking about the iPad Pro. So I think we're just looking at the possibility of leasing for longer. And we've discussed this in previous shows and on Twitter and so on, but this hypothetical iPad Air 3 that may be coming out in a couple of months' time, if that had similar specs to an iPad Pro, I would seriously be thinking about a 4-year lease at that point, because that device is going to be incredibly powerful and very, very stable for a long time to come, I think. At least 4 years. I mean, a long time to come. We're not talking decades, but we've done 3 years twice now. We've had 2010 to 2013, 2013 to 2016 on the fourth generation iPad. That iPad is not really suffering right now. Feels a little bit slow to me with my, you know, having experienced an iPad Pro, but even under iOS 9, those devices are still perfectly usable. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe we go to 4 years.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. And I think from my discussions with Apple, I think a lot of schools are starting to lean this way because it's allowing them to get more technology. And I feel like we're at a place with iOS where the software upgrades year to year are not taxing the older hardware like they used to.
No, I mean, what they are doing is they're taxing the very oldest hardware in the field. Right, so an iPad, original iPad Mini, is struggling under iOS 9 quite severely, but a Mini 2, not at all. iPad Air, not at all. iPad Air 2, certainly not, and of course the iPad Pro, not at all. So you're right that all things have been added to the operating system. It's not been the same as, you know, iOS 5 was on the original iPad, for example, where it barely fit and no more. And also, I think the other thing, Bradley, that we've not seen is we've not seen current or even recent hardware having features cut to enable support for the operating system, which is the kind of thing that happened in the iPhone 4 and 4S era, where some of the newer versions of the operating system, they ran in those older machines, those older phones, but they didn't quite do everything that the newer ones could. And of course, some of that was hardware related, for example, with AirDrop, because it just didn't have the right Bluetooth radios in it, for example, or Apple Watch support. But now you're seeing, you know, Apple Watch support goes back even to the iPhone 5. All the iPads have got the right radios in them now as well. So we're getting to a level of maturity that makes us or enables us to start thinking about the possibility of leasing these things a bit more like computers rather than like mobile devices.
And so, you know, and one thing to consider too, and this is probably something for your budget, like in year two and three, is accessory longevity. So although iPads have gotten a lot more stable, Lightning cables, let's just be honest, they have not. And that, I guess I'm not complaining there because they're cables and they fray and we're charging these things every day. So maybe like keep a stash. So if like, I don't know, if you're a school of a thousand students, keep a stash of 25 Amazon Basics Lightning cables in your desk. you know, buy them periodically. If they go on sale, buy a handful. If you have a certain number of, like, you know, like, well, I know at work I have like a PO limit of $100, so I don't have to like get approval to buy anything that's less than $100. I have to obviously turn the receipt in and document it, but I don't have to like get approval. So, you know, once a month buy $50 worth and just have those in your desk. Students break them, just hand them out like candy, because those things are going to break. I don't think you'll see wall adapters getting. I don't see those going as bad. They certainly can. Again, Amazon is your friend there. They sell very, very cheap ones. I'm a fan of buying the MFI certified ones just because I don't want my iPads to blow up.
Yeah, since we moved to lightning-based iPads, I've been a little more kind of not sure about this. We certainly bought very cheap Chinese lightning cables just for charging. And we buy bags of 30 at a time, and we experience something like a 50% failure rate. So I have to tell the kids, you know, take this. If it breaks the first time, use it, bring it back. I'll give you another one, because that's how it goes. We were doing the same thing with 30-pin cables back in the old days as well. But by that point, the 30-pin technology had been out for years and years and years. So the Chinese had sort of figured out how to make the knockoff ones reliably and very cheaply as well. The lightning ones are more expensive. They're about three times the cost of what we were paying for the 30-pin ones. But I'm always kind of a bit like, should I really be doing this because of, you know, this is for charging and what if something goes wrong, you know. But so far, we've not had a problem. The Amazon ones are, I think, like £11 or £12. And the Apple ones are just a ridiculous price. They're like £15 or something. So one of the things I'm quite interested in, and we'll mention this a wee bit later, is like, in our next lease, what can I do about like insurance for cables or something? Can I somehow get my reseller or the Apple store or something to agree to replace any failed cables in the lifespan of the lease? Is that something I can get? I don't know. But you're right that it's always the cables. It's never the chargers.
It's something to think about.
Oh, one other thing too, Bradley, the lifespan of the case as well. That's something to think about. The cases that we've had, they're now 2.5 years old. I have now replaced maybe 8 or 10 of them. So you're talking about 8 or 10% of the total, just because the hinges have worn, the closures have worn, things like that. So that's something to be aware of in the last year as well. Now we are replacing them with not very good cases, which maybe cost us a couple of pounds on Amazon. Again, not absolutely sure that's the right decision, but it's worked out well so far, and we're just trying to get to the end of the lease without spending another fortune on cases for a device that we're not going to have again. So obviously the device is going to change shape as well, so that's just something to bear in mind as you go through, particularly looking at the possibility of 4-year lease. You're probably going to replace the cases once during that lifespan.
Yeah, the last few months of a deployment are often just rough because its batteries are starting to get, you know, it's, and you're just like hanging on, like, okay, just hang on the rest of the year, guys. It's like, we can make it through the spring.
I suppose that would be one argument against the 4-year lease is battery. You know, once you get to year 4 of one of these devices, the battery is starting to struggle a little bit.
Yeah, and they're not easily replaceable in an iPad, and like, and even on laptops, it's just not cost effective. I mean, you know, like a battery for like a MacBook Air is $125 shipped. I mean, they're expensive. So before we move on, let's thank our final sponsor of the night. It's Jamf Software. Jamf provides IT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies. It includes Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs and education organizations. They have a great app for teachers called Casper Focus that works on their iPad. It allows them to control the iPads their students are using in their classroom. Casper Focus allows teachers to quickly gain students' attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select a specific Apple TV assigned to the class, choose and distribute iBooks, and even initiate AirPlay right from within the app called Casper Focus. Learn more about Casper Focus, the Casper Suite, and Jamf Software at jampsoftware.com. That's jamfsoftware.com. Thanks to Jamf for sponsoring the show this week. So, advantages of leasing. So let's work through that. I think for me, the number one thing is it's a guaranteed refresh. And because you're making a payment, if you continue making that payment, you know, obviously you have to redo the lease in the process and get new gear. But like budget-wise, it doesn't have to change a whole lot.
Yeah, if you can afford to build that into your cost structure, then that's you with current or, you know, modern hardware the whole time. I mean, I know for a fact, just looking at my school, that the devices I have that are on lease are modern and up to date. and the devices that we bought are now 10 years old. You know, we've got these 2006 iMacs that just will not quit. And every year it's been like, well, should we refresh the iMacs? Nah, they'll do another year. Yeah, they're still fine. They're still fine. They're still fine. And suddenly it's a decade later. And they are still fine, you know. But that's the thing I like about leasing. And it's not just that it guarantees a refresh, but when you sign a legal contract for a deployment or whatever, not only does that guarantee that a refresh will come along, but it also guarantees it in the face of changing staff and changing organizational priorities as well. So several times I've seen a situation where a school goes one-to-one and then, you know, they've got a plan, they've gone one-to-one in 1 year group, and then they've got a plan to do it in the next 4 years. And 2 years into this process, the head teacher that was really into this program leaves. The new head teacher doesn't care at all about this stuff. And then that program just withers on the vine and disappears. Whereas if you have this all built into leases and structured refresh, then whether or not the new head teacher's into this or not, you've got a contract that says in 3 years' time you're going to replace this. And then, you know, how are you going to stand against that once that's all in place? Is this new guy going to say, well, okay, you've got another year and then we're just going back to being a pencil and paper school again? That becomes more difficult. So I really strongly believe that leasing embeds the cultural change in your school in a way that just buying some doesn't quite do. And I think it also signals to the teachers early in your deployment that this is here for the long haul. And I think that's one of the things that we got really right at the start of our deployment, was that we signed a lease for 3 years. And we said, look, we've signed a deal for 3 years. First year can be whatever you want it to be. Progress in year two and year three. And that told people, it gave a signal to people that we were in this for the long haul. And I think that commitment is very important too.
Yeah, it's this is something I had not really thought about until I came to education and just kind of started understanding budget processes and you know, that whole thing. In previous jobs, I just never had to deal with budgets, and so this was like a whole new thing to me. I'm against leasing cars, for example. Do you lease your car though? Don't you?
We lease one of our cars. Yeah. Yep.
So let me just buy it, and we also drive cars until they fall apart. I am thankfully car payment free at the moment, and it is the most wonderful thing in the world. So, and this is another area. If you were going to have fees, this allows you to kind of easily budget, you know, the revenue for those fees, like with leasing. So if you're going to say, okay, we have 300 students, we're going to charge a $100 tech fee. You know, we have X number of fees that we can use towards that lease payment.
Yeah. I mean, just to take your car example, Bradley, I think the difference between leasing technology and leasing cars is that cars are a very mature and stable and predictable life cycle device. You know, there's not going to be a radical innovation in cars. Well, actually, now that I say that, maybe that isn't true anymore. But at least for the last, you know, 40 years or whatever, it's been the case that, you know, cars were cars, basically, right? And you could roughly guess how long you were going to get a car. You could do that calculation. And there was no discontinuity coming in that. Now, of course, electric cars, as I drive, that's the reason I leased, right? Is because my Nissan Leaf, which is a 24 kilowatt hour battery car, 100 miles of range, has already been superseded by a Nissan Leaf that could do 150 miles on a charge. And that's only a year and a half after me buying it. And so what's going to happen in 2 years' time, we're going to have Nissan Leafs that maybe do 300 miles. And if I have to try and sell off a four-year-old Nissan Leaf that can do a third of what the new car can do, what do you think my resale value is going to be? Not very good. But the beauty of the leasing program is that's Nissan's problem now and not mine. And I think we're still in the same situation with technology, that there are discontinuities coming along, but perhaps what we're seeing with iPad is that those are starting to smooth out already. And there's nothing obvious on the horizon with iPad in the same way that there is with electric cars and eventually self-driving cars that will lead you to want a major change in the kind of car you have or how much car you have or something like that when it comes to iPad. The process for iPad seems set reasonably fair for the next few years anyway.
Yeah, it's a great analogy. Never thought about it like that.
It's a computer car analogy that actually works. How'd you like that?
Yeah, that's true. That's true, yeah. Especially, new Tesla going to be $35,000?
Mm-hmm. Yep. The rich people are subsidizing normal people in Tesla world, and I think it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, we've got a parent that has a Tesla, and those door handles are amazing.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yep. I don't think the Tesla looks that great, though. Is this heresy to say that? It looks pretty anonymous on the road.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the way it looks.
The thing that would stress me about a car that expensive is the repairs are always really expensive.
Yeah, the whole package is a rich guy's package. You know, it's not just, I just make it afford the car, and now the servicing is really cheap like a normal car. It's not.
Like, I roll at paying $20 to have my tires rotated. I'm like, really, $20? Like, that, I'm cheap. So, what are the, you know, we've kind of worked through, like, a lot of the advantages of leasing. Again, we've got guaranteed refresh, lower upfront cost, you don't have to, you know, no more, we're going to make it another year discussions. What are the, some disadvantages to leasing, or are there any?
Well, I guess the thing, Bradley, is that you're always paying. You know, you never get to the situation you're in with your car where you're not making a payment for your hardware. You're always paying for the hardware. And of course, the financing company is not a charity. They're not doing that for free. You're, over the course of your lease, you're going to pay a bit more than if you just bought it outright out of your pocket. Of course, where are you going to get $100,000 to start your iPad program? You got that in the bank? Probably not, right? So leasing is a way to get started with a capital expenditure that you simply can't afford straight away. You know, lease it over a period of time.
Okay, here's one question for you. Let's say you get grant money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's say, like, you're estimating, hey, we're going to spend $100,000. We always use that term, but just an even number. So let's say you think, okay, we need $100,000 for the gear. You get a $90,000 grant 1 year. Obviously, I think at that point, you just make the purchase, right?
Well, I have deep concerns about any technology deployment that is funded through grants, unless you somehow know that you will get that grant every 3 years or every 4 years or whatever the cycle is, that you have a serious, well-founded belief that you're going to get that grant a lot, or that you have the opportunity to get multiple grants that will make up the difference. Because my big concern, Bradley, is we talk about this all the time, that large whole school technology deployments are a culture change. They're not just a purchase, right? It's not like buying a car. It's like, you know, it's like becoming a boat owner or something like that. You know, do you want to go back to not being a boat owner? And it's the same kind of thing. So let's say you do get that $90,000 grant. You buy a bunch of iPads. 4 years down the line, all your iPads are on their last legs. Their batteries are dying. Half of them have cracked screens. Where's your refresh coming from? You did it for $10,000 out of your pocket the first year. Now it's going to be 100 times that, or 10 times that. Where are you going to get that money from? You going to get another grant? What's going to happen? So I'm really concerned about that. You know, it's hard for me to say, look, you've got an opportunity to go one-to-one. You shouldn't do it. But you are storing up a problem that has to be solved 3 or 4 years down the line. And I'm not always sure that that's... In some ways, it's worse to have it and then get it taken away than never to have it in the first place.
Well, what I would recommend there, and obviously, I'm going to take free money.
Yeah.
And so what I would, so let's say you've got basically the majority of your grant or your lease paid or your deployment paid for first go around with grant money. And so let's say you think, okay, $100,000, you need to start in year, I think the next year, you need to start fitting your next refresh into your budget. Somehow, and either just not spending it and knowing, like, you know, you can end the year with a little bit of a surplus, and then you could use that towards networking or whatever. But you need to start building in that refresh into your budget basically right away, because what's going to happen, like you said earlier, like, let's say you think, okay, after 3 years, yeah, we're going to refresh this after 3 years, but we'll lease then. Well, what you're going to do in year four is you're going to say, we're just going to go one more year. Just one more year, then will be the year to build it into our budget. So you almost have to start it right away and just build it in and be preparing to refresh that gear. And if you got another grant, that's great. But if you don't, you've got the money set up in your budget.
Yeah, because you've got to think about the user experience, right? The student experience. What's that going to be like when they come up for the first 2 years of the school, deeply technologically pervasive and so on and so on, and then the whole thing just disappears after 3 years. And they're like Roadrunner going off a cliff, and then, pew, down they go. That's my concern always when it comes to grant money.
Yeah, we're kind of going through the E-rate process now. We're going to get a good portion of our Wi-Fi network paid for. But the cool thing is, like, we're already paying that lease, so I'm just going to be able to go to a smaller lease on our next Wi-Fi deployment. We ended up not refreshing last year, and it kind of worked out well because of the way E-rate changed here in the U.S. So we should probably do a show on that at some point.
Well, those are the good reasons to wait another year, You know, if you know something, the landscape's going to change. Like 802.11ac is going to come the year after. Let's hold on another year and get that, rather than just let's hold on another year because we've got something better to do with the money, and the devices just get older and older and older and older, and increasingly less used.
So, when it comes to leasing under here in the US, Apple provides its own built-in leasing. We've seen fairly good rates. Like, they're very competitive. They offer us better rates than we get from, like, a bank for this kind of deployment. And, but Apple is also, like, any money they make on leasing is a thumbs up because they're already making huge margins on the hardware in general.
Yeah, it's a little different over here. Apple have Apple Financial Services, which is just, you know, an Apple brand on top of some bank leasing program. I mean, our current lease, I think, is actually with Dell Financial Services at the end of the day through our current reseller. So it's one of these things where that's where you shop around, right? You say, well, you know, here's the deal I've got from the reseller. Here's their finance. Here's somebody else's finance. Here's somebody else's finance. Let them fight it out amongst themselves. And that's somewhere where there actually is a lot of flexibility. And I remember in our last deployment, we looked at the unit cost that each reseller was coming back to us with, and then we looked at the quarterly repayments, and you were like, well, you're the cheapest device, but how come your repayments are higher than this guy over here? And the answer is, go back to our previous show, because they built in margin in the leasing payments that they were cutting out of the device to look like the cheapest device, right? Same thing with in previous shows we were talking about, you know, trying to upsell you an Apple TV or something like that, so that they can make up the margin they weren't getting on the device. This is another place where margin can be built in, and it's worth just being careful, you know, looking at the unit cost. Okay, that's a good deal, that's a good deal, that's not such a good deal. But then when you look at what they're packing on the margin of the financing, you just have to be careful you're not getting screwed over in that other column as well.
What are the advantages of purchasing? You know, we've kind of talked about that. Full ownership and flexibility whenever you want to change hardware. So, I mean, you purchase it, and whenever you decide to replace it, you replace it. But just keep in mind, when you purchase, you're going to end up in a situation where it's going to be a, hey, it's not a good budget year. Let's wait one more year. Because, again, rather than taking a $100,000 lease, breaking it up into 3 or 4 yearly payments, or, you know, monthly payments for 3 to 4 years, every third to fourth year, you're going to have to come up with $100,000.
Yeah. And I think the only thing that is in favor in this discussion is that Apple hardware has good residual values. So you actually do have a reasonable amount of value in devices even after 3 years. I mean, I know I've got parents coming to my door right now asking me, when are you selling these iPads? Can we please buy one for a three-year-old device? And they're still desirable, and there still is enough residual value in them that people are interested in spending reasonable good money on them. So that is something, but at the same time, I think the disadvantages of purchasing are quite sufficiently bad that's not enough to make it worthwhile.
We've actually pretty much got our entire Mac lab sold already to a lady that does a Minecraft club. She's buying like 15 of our 20. I've already got them sold. It's kind of nice. It makes it easy. Disadvantage of purchasing, we kind of covered that with massive upfront cost. There's just never a good time for this without doing some sort of fundraising. So if you could raise this through fundraising, like you're going to have an auction. You know, we have like a yearly auction at our school. We raise money. And so, a lot of schools will do that and they'll have a project every year. So this year we're going to raise money and buy a bus. Next year we're raising money to replace the gym floor. Well, if you had that, say, okay, every 4 years we're going to have an auction to fundraise for a new technology deployment, that can work.
Yeah, it can work. And if you know that you have a, quite frankly, wealthy parent base who can afford to dip into the pockets every so often and get you the kind of money you need to do that project, then maybe that works for your school. But for most schools, and Cedars is certainly one of those schools, there's no way I could have found the money out of any budget that, you know, or even a bank loan that we could have probably got to cover what we needed to start our iPad project. So leasing was a way that we could budget per student. We could say, well, you know, here's the number of students we're going to have. You know, here's the maximum we could have in the building. What number are we going to pick in between those two numbers? How many are we going to get? What's the cost per student? And so on and so on. So it's about getting the number right as well. And that's something we maybe should talk a little bit about with leasing as well, is how many do you lease? My guess is probably 1% to 2% more than the students you expect to have over the course. Now, we're in an interesting situation right now where we have now got, we have grown sufficiently over the course of this lease that I have now run out of iPads. And I've used all my spares. I've deployed all my spares to students. We leased 110. We've now got 106 students. There's only four iPads left that they're in the hands of staff for various other purposes. I could pull them back and have a few spares, but we're rapidly running out of devices, and it's a wonderful situation to be in, and I don't want to decry it in any way. But think about, what are you going to do if you get into a situation where you have more students than you have devices for, if you are going one-to-one? And for us, what we're planning to do is to buy three or four iPad minis, put them into the five-year-old classroom, and take the full-size iPads out of there and keep them as spares or deploy them to new pupils that are starting between now and the new lease. And that will also give us some experience with device enrollment program as well, because those devices will be under DEP. So that's something to bear in mind too.
And so the next thing is, what all do you roll into your lease? You know, there's things to consider, and that's nice, because then, and you want to consider everything you're going to buy, because you don't want to like set up your lease and then realize you need about $10,000 more worth of stuff.
Yeah.
So you get cases, carts, and this may be the charge, you know, just for charging, or this may be portability from, you know, floor to floor. Your charging infrastructure, Apple TVs, Wi-Fi, and MDM. Yep. Apple here in the U.S. resells Jamf. So I'm actually going to build in like my Jamf for the next 4 years right into my lease.
We had a conversation about that in our school, and we decided not to do it. And basically the reason was because our licensing fee for Jamf was sufficiently small that we could afford to just buy it. And there was no point in us borrowing money to pay that fee when we could just pay it. So we just did the lower of the two. I think the thing to think about, the way I make this decision is, do I need the flexibility of leasing for this thing as well, right? So, for example, the cases. Well, the cases aren't an insurmountable cost, right? They may be £2,000 or something like that to buy a good case for every device that we're going to lease. We just bought them out of pocket at the start of the lease. We didn't put them in the lease this time. We did the first time, mainly because I didn't really think that closely about it. I wasn't really sure what I was doing that much. If you think something like a cart, for example, is there going to be a technological change that means you're going to want to refresh your cart on the same cycle as your devices? Probably not, right? So I would think perhaps things like carts and charging infrastructure should probably be thought of more as a capital expenditure, because they will endure in a way that your devices will not. Your devices will turn over and you'll be able to take out those iPads, put new ones into your cart, and your cart will still be perfectly good in 3 years' time. Whereas the devices, and maybe the Apple TV might be the other thing you might want to build in the same way, because it may turn over in a way that you would want to change alongside, you know, in what is that going to be, 2019? Will there be a different Apple TV I want from the one I've got right now? Perhaps.
Yeah, Apple TVs. Here's a random question for you. You're buying 30 Apple TVs today. Are you buying the old one or the new one?
I got to say I'm buying the new one, just because it's the new one. And it's clear that, you know, the old Apple TV is what it is, and it's never going to change. But having said that, do I ever need it to change? I mean, what do you do with your Apple TV in school? You use it for AirPlay mirroring, right? That's what it's for. Is it better to just half the cost and just get an acceptable level of performance with AirPlay mirroring? It's clear the new work is going into the new device, but I haven't yet seen compelling applications for classroom use right native on the Apple TV. If I saw that, I would be much more interested for the new one, but I just don't see that yet.
Yeah, it's just always hard to it's always hard to lease and go in and buying things that are already so out of date.
Yeah, that would be the only thing I would be concerned about with the old one, is I'm buying in, you know, it's probably around 30 or something, you know, because I've got two Apple TVs out of the nine in school that are the 720p model that they didn't get the iOS 7 appearance update. So they're getting a bit old as well. And I'm starting to notice a slight performance difference between those ones and even the, you know, the 1080p version of the smaller, the third generation Apple TV as well. So yeah, maybe just because it's the newer one is the right answer rather than anything else.
So do you maybe blow your mind right here? You could sell those for the cost of the new Apple TV.
Really?
that 720p model was easily jailbreakable. I mean, I'm talking like piddly easy. So like I had one and sold it for like, I think $160 on eBay.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's crazy. So You could literally probably flip those today for new Apple TVs.
Interesting. I might look into that.
Yeah, and I bet you there's a lot of schools that have those hanging around.
Yeah.
So
I just need to find which two they are.
Yeah, so if you've got 720p Apple TVs in your school, this is the ones that do not look like iOS 8 or iOS 7. They have the old style. They are worth
glossy buttons.
Yeah, the glossy buttons, they are worth good money on eBay, especially if you'll jailbreak them. Like, there's like a Mac app to do it, and you need a mini USB to USB cord. Like, it is so easy to jailbreak them. But yeah, like easily 150, if not more. Yeah, so blew your mind there and made you a bunch of money, or allow you to go back and do Apple TVs next week. So, last part about the financing is, I think what we should discuss is AppleCare. I mean, I think you know, a lot of schools are going to have opinions here, but I think I'm going to come out and say that I don't recommend AppleCare, but I do recommend budgeting for repairs.
Yeah, everybody wants to sell you AppleCare because AppleCare, in 93% to 95% of cases, is just pure margin for whoever sold it to you, because you're probably not going to break that many in a way that AppleCare will cover, right? You may break more than that, but AppleCare is not going to be interested. Essentially, AppleCare Plus is the new thing, of course, Bradley, which is it's basically a consumer-grade insurance product that's closely tied to one specific piece of hardware. And with AppleCare Plus, what you get is two breakages in the first 2 years repaired for a much lower fee than the standard out-of-warranty service charge, which is high and getting higher all the time. So the thing about AppleCare is it's tied to a specific serial number. So it's not that you can buy 10 AppleCare packages and use them up for whatever 10 devices you break. You've got to have AppleCare on every single device, every single serial number, so that the one that you break is covered by AppleCare Plus. And that's a very hard probability game to play. How do I know which one's going to break? So in the past, I have certainly recommended what you've recommended, which is don't buy AppleCare, stash all that money for your repair fund. But as the out-of-warranty service charge has gotten higher, I mean, when we started with the iPad 1, the out-of-warranty service charge, now that's the fee you pay if you walk up to the Genius Bar with a smashed iPad and you want it fixed. That was £129 for the first iPad. For the fourth generation iPad, it's £250, and for the iPad Pro, it's £475. So, you know, you're looking at huge numbers now, and I'm looking at our next deployment, going, we should probably organise some actual formal insurance policy here. And I think what's happened is that a lot of insurance companies now are looking at the historical breakage rates of iPads in schools, and they're saying, okay, that premium doesn't have to be particularly high. In early days, a lot of insurance companies were charging a fortune for school iPad insurance programs because they were looking at a piece of glass going into schools and going, that's going to break. But in fact, the repair record of the device now is such that those premiums are much more reasonable than they used to be.
Yeah, I didn't realize that prices on that probably have come down. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, no, there were some insurers that in the early days just wouldn't cover iPad programs in schools because they were just so terrified of massive breakage rates. But one thing to mention, Bradley, is that there are some insurers may put some slightly onerous conditions on your policy, such as I've seen conditions where schools have to use a specified case, and it's one of those kind of military spec defender cases, which just ruins your deployment, in my opinion. Other things like you're not allowed to take it out into the playground or something like that. You're not allowed to take it out the school building on a trip or whatever. So just make sure you read all the terms and conditions of your policy before you agree to it, because some of them might be beyond what you want to agree to, and they might impinge on your actual deployment as well.
Yeah, you want to kind of limit what's going to make it worse. Like, you want that to be kind of a silent factor. And then I also would not recommend talking up the fact that you have insurance to your students. And I think it's fair to, like, to see if you have insurance, you can just mention that to parents in passing. Like, we have insurance on all of these, and explain your policies. But the more you talk about how great your insurance is, maybe the less likely your students are to take care of them.
Oh, I absolutely guarantee it. You know, if you get up and make a song and dance at assembly about how all risks are covered and don't worry about it, then those things are going to be frisbees at lunchtime, and they're going to be flying around the playground, getting used as goalposts and all kinds of stuff. And there are, you know, existing proofs that that happens. And I know of at least one school in the UK where they made a huge big deal of their insurance policy and how nothing would ever go wrong with these devices, and the kids just went nuts with them. And about 50% got broken in the first year. And that's, you know, I would mention it to parents. I would not mention it to students. I literally wouldn't mention it at all. And in fact, what I do in school is, even though there is various kinds of coverage, if a child, like, you know, roughly puts their iPad down on the table or whatever, I'll say, by the way, do you know how much the repair for that is? £250, right? Just bear that in mind. How much is your Christmas presents? And that tends to focus the mind a little bit, even if, you know, they're not necessarily going to pay that rate out of pocket themselves.
There's an old episode of Seinfeld where, like, Jerry's going to get a rental car, and they said, "Do you want the insurance?" And he's like, "Oh, give me the insurance. I'm going to beat the you know what out of this car."
Is that Louis C.K. thing where he's, and if you heard this line where he's the story about going back to the airport and he's so late for the plane that he just leaves the car at the front of the airport and he phones the rental company from the plane and he's like, "You know your car? I just left outside the terminal." And the guy's like, "You're not supposed to do that, sir." And he says, "Well, I did it already and I'm on the plane, so if you want to go and get it, this is where it is." And the guy goes, "Well, okay, we'll go and get it, but just this once."
So, yeah, what are you going to do? So, that kind of wraps up our financing section. I think every part of this episode, we're not trying to tell you exactly what to do, but we're trying to give the information to help you make the best decision for your school and your context. And so I hope we've done that. And so briefly, before we wrap up, let's talk about like preparation for rollout. Because again, you're really starting to think through here, and these are not things you need to be doing like the day before deployment. These are things you need to be doing months before deployment.
Do you know what, Bradley? I wonder, should we bench this discussion for another show and put in a part 7B on this series? Because I think this could actually be a longer conversation than people might be able to stand right now. What do you think?
Yeah, that's true. We're already close to an hour. So yeah, let's table that for a second show. Financing went longer than we thought. I guess you and I have more opinions about it than I thought we did.
You opened the show saying this is probably going to be a short show and there's a whole hour just in financing. But I think it's something that is very important because it impinges on a number of things. And in particular, the one I'm always concerned about is, how are you going to keep this going? Can you keep it going? And I'm genuinely concerned for deployments where a Herculean effort was made to get to a certain level of provision, and then there's no plan for keeping it or growing it up beyond that. And that's something I think would be, you know, devastating might be too strong a word, but maybe not to students who are halfway through that program when it all goes wrong or when it all falls apart. And that's something that I don't want to see happen anywhere. I'm particularly concerned that it doesn't happen to these schools that our friends and listeners and our children go to as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we'll stop there for this week. We'll pick back up with rollout next week. Thanks to our sponsors this week, Squarespace and Jamp Software. If you're interested in sponsoring the show, you can contact us at outofschool.net. If you have an app for schools or a service, we'd love to chat with you about talking to some of the best listeners in the world. But I am on the web at chambersdaily.com, and I am on Twitter at Bradley Chambers. So I'd love to connect with you if I haven't yet.
Okay, and I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web. And we'd also like to thank our Patreon supporters who have made these shows extra possible, shall we say. And if you want to join them and support the show directly, you can go to patreon.com/outofschool and you can sign up to be a Patreon supporter of this show as well. And we'd really appreciate your support there.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So, again, thanks to all of our listeners as well. Just the fact that you guys take an hour with us every week, or maybe 30 minutes if it's like on 2x playback, or an hour and a half if you listen to it slowly. Speaking of that, Fraser, why don't you plug your other podcast as well? We haven't done that in a few weeks.
Yeah, we haven't really mentioned that. My other show now is called Canvas. And Federico Vitici and I started this show just at the beginning of January this year to try and help people better get more out of iOS, get more out of living an iPad lifestyle like I do and like Federico does. And you know, we record the show on iOS, we do the notes on iOS, we mostly live our lives on iOS, and the things that we know how to do, I felt really strongly that a lot of people didn't know how to do. So we've looked at things like how to download and upload files to the web and from the web on iOS, how to work with document providers. I think if you run iOS 9, that is one of the shows you have to listen to, because knowing that is like a superpower for iOS. We've looked at photo management. We're just about to record the next show where we're going to look at photo editing. And then we've got a whole list of other common and less common tasks that people want to do with iOS, but maybe don't necessarily know how to do. So you can get that show at relay.fm/canvas. You can find it in iTunes. You can find it in the Overcast directory and so on. And we'd love to have you join us there as well. It's 30 minutes every 2 weeks.
Or 15 on 2x playback.
Yep, 30 minutes is the new 2 hours.
Well, I saw someone mention to you on Twitter that they're going to have to slow your show down to be able to take it all in.
Yeah, the document provider show is one where you're going to want to listen to that a couple of times just to make sure you get everything that's in there. We pack it in.
So, again, thanks for listening, everybody. And if you're on Twitter and you want to talk about the series, you can use the hashtag Deploy16, and then we'll catch that and join the discussion. So, hope you have a great week.